even if it's something as simple as like changing the language that I use, so that way future children or grandchildren don't copy that language. Or
okay,
yeah,
okay. And that's my point. If you're going to take a long view of your country, whether it's Germany, America, or anything else, you're going to make some different sacrifices. You're going to take some different actions and choices. And you would give away some of what might be more comfortable for you now so that those future generations could do a little better, right?
Yeah.
As a parent, as you know, when you're growing up, when you're a little kid, there's stuff me and mom did that, you know, it would have been easier for us to just go out to eat every night and just go to the movies every night. But we're trying to think long term, how are we going to help you kids someday? And in a lot of ways, we didn't do too well. Get a good scholarship. You're pretty smart. Keep that to beta, because I'm a broke history teacher. Yeah, if you want to be rich, don't teach history, kids. But you make some sacrifices and you plan for this long term. So this is the idea that Hitler finds himself in, and that the greater German people really embrace. Hey, our world around us sucks. Look at it. It absolutely sucks. You're telling me that we could be better now. A little bit. We can make some changes, but we can make it so much better for these future generations if we get together and work on these things. The reason this matters is because when we talk about, and this is mostly about, you know, Nazi medicine, when we talk about people in the medical field, there's going to be this weird switch, okay? When we talk about the Hippocratic Oath, right? Do no harm. That's the summary. Don't do anything to hurt anybody. Help those that you can. If you have a tangible, right in front of you, view of that, that's going to be a lot different than if you view your country, your nation, as one organism, and you want to do what's best for that country, for that future, for that Volk. 100, 500, 1,000 years from now, what am I going to do within my profession to do no harm to what the future is?
Which is really kind of an interesting concept, because throughout this whole, you've been talking about like pride and like how they've had a proud history. And when you're in that moment and you have a leader preaching to you saying, hey, guess what? Things suck right now, but in 1,000 years with our sacrifice, they'll be pretty dang good. And you have this proud history to back you up, and you're sitting there thinking, I can do something to make them better.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, when that better does happen, you're going to be pretty proud of it. And you'll be proud of yourself too, because you'll know that you contributed to it.
There
you did that. And
there
that's what's appealing to the people.
Yeah, so even if your personal home life doesn't get better, your personal situation doesn't improve, you feel like you contributed to this future, that's real. We see that in religious circles all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to do this or that for church, whatever religion you are, you make these kind of sacrifices all the time because you're looking for a future, whether on earth or in whatever your version of heaven is, that makes it better, that makes it worth it.
And you see it in like even war all the time. People will literally give their life because even though it makes their situation bad, they're looking to the future to try and help this greater good.
And I think there's a little bit of that in Germany too, because it's a very Catholic and Lutheran society. Those are your predominant religions. Definitely Christian across the board, okay? And you're used to hearing about, well, we're going to make some sacrifices, get our reward later on for the sacrifices we make now, different Bible verses that are going to
help shape that.
It's very easy to apply that to a right now in front of me political situation. We've taken a theoretical or a religious model and applied it to our world. Now this gets dangerous, and we're going to see this a ton when we get to this next topic here, right? And by golly, we're just cruising right along. So having this understanding of Volk is important in order to talk about eugenics. Okay, do you have a basic concept of what eugenics is?
You know, eugenics is, it's kind of like the start of racism, basically. That one, based off of like gene codes and things like that, that one race is superior than another.
Okay, so that's where it kind of ends up, right? But there's no gene code really to think about back then. We're not there yet.
And now, a special word from our sponsors.
Hey, Bubba. What you looking so mad over there for?
I'll fix it to tell you. You see that little blinking light on that there computer screen?
Yeah, so what?
Well, way I see it, that little light actually a camera. I think the government watches everything I do. I think they're using that interweb to spy on me.
Man, that sounds plumb crazy. What the heck you drinking over there? Is that some of Miss Ella's lemonade?
No, that ain't no lemonade. My friend JJ out there driving truck, he done found this stuff on the AM radio. It's called Conspiracy. It don't taste no good at all, but it opened up my mind. I can see things clear now.
What? What you talking about? Give me a little taste of that.
Ooh, man, that's a little bit bitter. But wait, I'm feeling something. Yeah. Yeah, I think that government is spying on you.
I see that. They're looking right through that little light right there.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you. You know what else? I think 9/11 was an inside job.
That's right. That's right. And they done stole that election from Trump.
Conspiracy. Because sometimes, even drinking the Kool-Aid ain't enough. And now back to the dark side.
But there are definitely some implications. If we study human beings and we can determine by physical characteristics that some people are going to be better, stronger, faster, or on the flip side, weaker, more likely to fail, or more of a burden on society. If we can figure that out and quantify it, this is where life gets scary, because that means we can take some pretty wild ethical jumps to try and minimize or maximize, depending on which way you want to look at it. And eugenics is always two things. It's this positive eugenics. We want to selectively breeding, like with the agriculture or with animals. That's positive eugenics in a way. We want to get the best product we can. So we're going to have these people get together. We're going to have these animals get together. We want the blue ribbon winners from the fair to have offspring because they're more likely to be good, right? We still see this today in like horse racing. Hey, what are the bloodlines in this horse? Okay, when you apply that to people.
That's when it can get really scary.
It gets really sketchy really quick. Now, we see a ton of this, especially, you know, Hitler and the Nazis are gonna take this kind of idea and wanna apply that to Jews. They're gonna wanna apply that to the Roma, which is, you know, the gypsies. They're going to want to apply that to the Russians, the Asians, anybody who's not them. They want to be able to show, oh, you're not. We can prove it. We can qualify and quantify it. And maybe there's something to do about it. But this whole concept of eugenics, it's science. We know now it's bad science. But in the 1900s, 1920s, all the way up until the early 1930s, we don't really have this understanding that it's bad science. Okay? We're chasing it. Like, there was a whole time in the world where when we thought about what volcanoes came from and everything, nobody knew that there was plate tectonics. And you had these plates of Earth going over and near and sliding past each other. There was no plate tectonic theory 150 years ago. It wasn't there. So your explanations for things were weird. It was still science. It was based on observation, the best they could, but it wasn't right. And so if you have bad inputs, what are you gonna have?
You're gonna have bad outcomes.
Garbage in, garbage out. So we've got this style of study. Let's see what we can find out from people. It's kind of, we're going to take these theories of Darwin, okay, Darwinism,
evolution,
selective breeding, all that, and let's apply it to humans. And if you do that in a vacuum, we're just going to apply it and let the science take us where it will, okay? In our day, we hear this all the time, right? Follow the science. We live in COVID, and every politician on either side, we're going to follow the science. That's a great idea when science is right. And it's scary when science is wrong. And this is one that turned out to be wrong. But guess where it started and really took hold and was most studied? You got a guess? I'll give you a hint.
In America.
Yes. Yes. The study of eugenics, it kind of starts in maybe like Italy and Europe, but America jumps on this. And if you think about it, you can imagine why this would mean a lot in America. 1920s America. What possible application could eugenics have that would matter to a certain geographical group of people?
I feel like I should definitely know this.
How might this science be applied in the South?
Oh, this science could be really easily applied to the South, because guess what? We have this race of people that's so much better at working on these, you know, like plantations and things like that to make us money. So
there you go.
Let's make us some money.
There you go. There's huge interest in eugenics in America because there's this huge racial element. Like the South had to give up that slavery was bad, but they're still living in this Jim Crow era, hardcore. And it's not just the South, people in the Midwest and Indiana and Canada. I mean, this is very common that the thought that, you know, black people are, you know, they're people, but they're not like us. That's pretty common, unfortunately, in America. That's not limited to just the South, but the white people in the South who still control a great deal and still build up their own kind of society and self-worth by denigrating someone else, they love this. This could be great for them because now it's science. It's science.
People like the idea of science because at the time, science couldn't be wrong. If it was science, it was true.
Science is hot. It was the end thing. It's still kind of the end thing. There's nothing wrong with science. You just always want to withhold some judgment until you get to the end. And sometimes you got to question where those ends might be. And we'll get into that in a lot more detail in some future episodes. But in America in 1920, I pulled this up just to make sure. I want to say it's 1924. Nope, it's 27. Okay. You know who Oliver Wendell Holmes is?
No.
Okay, Supreme Court Justice. Okay. He's the guy that said you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah.
So he explained the First Amendment through something we've all heard ever since. So pretty smart guy, right?
Yeah.
In some ways. In Virginia, they had a... Shocking, right? Virginia. Huh, the South, I wonder. Now, these eugenic laws are in places other than the South, but they have one there that they're not applying racially per se, but they are applying to people with mental disorders. Now, our understanding of mental disorders in the 1920s is terrible.
So bad.
There's no pharmaceutical way to deal with that. You don't have the drugs. And even psychology and psychiatry are kind of in their infancy. They're still developing. And if you are not normal, you're hosed. It's bad.
Wow.
So they have someone there who becomes pregnant. Okay? Now, it is rumored that her mother was a loose-moraled woman who was not smart or educated. And grandma was, too. So this is great, right? If this is your reputation, that your people and your bloodline for two or three generations are loose-moraled and promiscuous and seem to get pregnant, which I always kind of feel about this with the science. I think science by then knew it took two, right? Like, you didn't just wake up and decide I'm going to be pregnant today. It took some help. Anyway, they had laws so that people could be sterilized by force. Okay, and remember, we're talking about an operation in the 1920s that's probably, I mean, if you get your tubes tied today or a vasectomy today, that's probably a pretty typical, easy, low-risk surgery. Is there any of those surgeries that are low risk in the 1920s? Maybe not. Okay. But the point is, you didn't even get a choice. You're not convicted of a crime, and this is your punishment. You're in an asylum, or you're deemed unfit. And the killer is that there's a category called feeble-mindedness, which, are you kidding me?
Hold on.
That won't work. You have to walk over there. I'm positive you were going to throw something and see if it would pick up. Been there, tried that. We're going to have to work on that in future casts. So, feeble-mindedness just encompasses whatever you want. If you can get enough people to say, yeah, this person who is slow or who didn't graduate high school for whatever reason, or who I don't like, or who I don't want to be part of my family, the crotchety old grandma that lives in the back room, whatever. Like, you could be considered feeble-minded. And with a label like that, it's not going to affect grandma. But if you're a young person of child-rearing age, and you're constituted as feeble-minded, they can sterilize you. And so some advocates for people's rights are waiting. They're trying to find the perfect person to have this case with. And they finally do. This is Buck. The case is Buck versus Bell. And she is this person who has these, you know, mom and grandma were apparently loose-moraled women, allegedly. Now, it turns out that the reason that Buck got pregnant was a rape by, I think, someone in her family, actually. So I don't remember for sure who it was, but great, right? So now we're going to blame you, the victim, for being raped. And on top of all that, you're feeble-minded, and we're going to sterilize you so this never happens again.
And it's also in the 1920s, so operation is not going to go so well.
And we end up all the way to the Supreme Court, which is usually a good thing. But we know from civil rights law in the 1920s that wasn't always a good thing, right? And the quote by Oliver Wendell Holmes, who's so smart to say you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, is basically that as a society, three generations of imbeciles is enough.
Wow.
So how's that make you?
Not like he's not such a smart.
Yeah. If you could somehow demonstrate that this has been going on for a couple generations, it's okay to go ahead and sterilize her, because we wouldn't want that to continue. Okay, and this thought is that it's going to be an unfair burden on society. You're going to have kids, and we're going to have to take care of them. And not only that, they're going to be stupid kids, too. They're going to be feeble-minded, or they're going to be blind, or they're going to have seizures, whatever these different illnesses, ailments, or categories are. You're going to have more of those, because that's how, you know, breeding works. Your children have half of you, and they're no doubt going to get the bad half. So we're just going to sterilize you. And that was found to be okay in America in 1927. Right about the time Hitler is just starting to take control of the Nazi Party and really kind of build it up and make this thing go. How convenient. How convenient. But there are definitely some implications. If we study human beings and we can determine by physical characteristics that some people are going to be better, stronger, faster, or on the flip side, weaker, more likely to fail, or more of a burden on society. If we can figure that out and quantify it, this is where life gets scary, because that means we can take some pretty wild ethical jumps to try and minimize or maximize, depending on which way you want to look at it. And eugenics is always two things. It's this positive eugenics. We want to selectively breeding, like with the agriculture or with animals. That's positive eugenics in a way. We want to get the best product we can, so we're going to have these people get together. We're going to have these animals get together. We want the blue ribbon winners from the fair to have offspring, because they're more likely to be good, right? We still see this today in like horse racing. Hey, what are the bloodlines in this horse? Okay, when you apply that to people,
that's when it can get really scary.
It gets really sketchy really quick. Now, we see a ton of this, especially, you know, Hitler and the Nazis are going to take this kind of idea and want to apply that to Jews. They're going to want to apply that to the Roma, which is, you know, the gypsies. They're going to want to apply that to the Russians, the Asians, anybody who's not them. They want to be able to show, oh, you're not. We can prove it. We can qualify and quantify it. And maybe there's something to do about it. But this whole concept of eugenics, it's science. We know now it's bad science. But in the 1900s, 1920s, all the way up until the early 1930s, we don't really have this understanding that it's bad science. Okay? We're chasing it. Like, there was a whole time in the world where when we thought about what volcanoes came from and everything, nobody knew that there was plate tectonics. And you had these plates of Earth going over and near and sliding past each other. There was no plate tectonic theory 150 years ago. It wasn't there. So your explanations for things were weird. It was still science. It was based on observation, the best they could, but it wasn't right. And so if you have bad inputs, what are you going to have?
You're going to have bad outcomes.
Garbage in, garbage out. So we've got this style of study. Let's see what we can find out from people. It's kind of, we're going to take these theories of Darwin, okay, Darwinism,
evolution,
selective breeding, all that, and let's apply it to humans. And if you do that in a vacuum, we're just going to apply it and let the science take us where it will, okay? In our day, we hear this all the time, right? Follow the science. Yeah. We live in COVID, and every politician on either side, we're going to follow the science. That's a great idea. When science is right. And it's scary when science is wrong. And this is one that turned out to be wrong. But guess where it started and really took hold and was most studied? You gotta guess. I'll give you a hint.
In America.
Yes. Yes. The study of eugenics, it kind of starts in maybe like Italy and Europe, but America jumps on this. And if you think about it, you can imagine why this would mean a lot in America. 1920s America. What possible application could eugenics have that would matter to a certain geographical group of people?
I feel like I should definitely know this.
How might this science be applied in the South?
Oh, this science could be really easily applied to the South because guess what? We have this race of people that's so much better at working on these, you know, like plantations and things like that to make us money. So
there you go.
Let's make us some money.
There you go. There's huge interest in eugenics in America because there's this huge racial element. Like the South had to give up that slavery was bad, but they're still living in this Jim Crow era, hardcore. And it's not just the South, people in the Midwest and Indiana and Kansas. I mean, this is very common that the thought that, you know, black people are, you know, they're people, but they're not like us. That's pretty common, unfortunately, in America. That's not limited to just the South, but the white people in the South who still control a great deal and still build up their own kind of society and self-worth by denigrating someone else, they love this. This could be great for them because now it's science. It's science.
People like the idea of science because at the time, science couldn't be wrong. If it was science, it was true.
Science is hot. It was the end thing. It's still kind of the end thing. There's nothing wrong with science. You just always want to withhold some judgment until you get to the end. And sometimes you got to question where those ends might be. And we'll get into that in a lot more detail in some future episodes. But in America in 1920, I pulled this up just to make sure. I want to say it's 1924. Nope, it's 27. Okay. You know who Oliver Wendell Holmes is?
No.
Okay, Supreme Court Justice.
Okay.
He's the guy that said you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah.
So he explained the First Amendment through something we've all heard ever since. So pretty smart guy, right?
Yeah.
In some ways. In Virginia, they had a... Shocking, right? Virginia. Huh, the South, I wonder. Now, these eugenic laws are in places other than the South, but they have one there that they're not applying racially per se, but they are applying to people with mental disorders. Now, our understanding of mental disorders in the 1920s is terrible.
So bad.
There's no pharmaceutical way to deal with that. You don't have the drugs. And even psychology and psychiatry are kind of in their infancy. They're still developing. And if you are not normal, you're hosed. It's bad.
Wow.
So they have someone there who becomes pregnant. Okay? Now, it is rumored that her mother was a loose-moraled woman who was not smart or educated. And grandma was too. So this is great, right? If this is your reputation, that your people and your bloodline for two or three generations are loose-moraled and promiscuous and seem to get pregnant, which I always kind of feel about this with the science. I think science by then knew it took two, right? Like, you didn't just wake up and decide I'm going to be pregnant today. It took some help. Anyway, they had laws so that people could be sterilized by force. Okay? And remember, we're talking about an operation in the 1920s that's probably, I mean, if you get your tubes tied today or a vasectomy today, that's probably a pretty typical, easy, low-risk surgery. Is there any of those surgeries that are low-risk in the 1920s? Maybe
no.
Not. Okay? But the point is, you didn't even get a choice. You're not convicted of a crime, and this is your punishment. You're in an asylum, or you're deemed unfit. And the killer is that there's a category called feeble-mindedness. Which, are you kidding me?
Hold on.
That won't work. You have to walk over there. I'm positive you were going
to
throw something and see if it would pick it up.
Something.
Been there, tried that. We're going to have to work on that in future casts. So, feeble-mindedness just encompasses whatever you want. If you can get enough people to say, yeah, this person who is slow or who didn't graduate high school for whatever reason, or who I don't like, or who I don't want to be part of my family, the crotchety old grandma that lives in the back room, whatever. Like, you could be considered feeble-minded. And with a label like that, it's not going to affect grandma. But if you're a young person of child-rearing age and you're constituted as feeble-minded, they can sterilize you. And so some advocates for people's rights are waiting. They're trying to find the perfect person to have this case with. And they finally do. This is Buck. The case is Buck versus Bell. And she is this person who has these, you know, mom and grandma were apparently loose-moraled women, allegedly. Now, it turns out that the reason that that Buck got pregnant was a rape by, I think, someone in her family, actually. So I don't remember for sure who it was, but great, right? So now we're going to blame you, the victim, for being raped. And on top of all that, you're feeble-minded, and we're going to sterilize you so this never happens again.
And it's also in the 1920s, so operation is not going to go so well.
And we end up all the way to the Supreme Court, which is usually a good thing. But we know from civil rights law in the 1920s that wasn't always a good thing, right? And the quote by Oliver Wendell Holmes, who's so smart to say you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, is basically that as a society, three generations of imbeciles is enough.
Wow.
So how does that make you?
Not like he's not such a smart.
Yeah, if you could somehow demonstrate that this has been going on for a couple generations, it's okay to go ahead and sterilize her, because we wouldn't want that to continue. Okay? And this thought is that it's going to be an unfair burden on society. You're going to have kids, and we're going to have to take care of them. And not only that, they're going to be stupid kids, too. They're going to be feeble-minded, or they're going to be blind, or they're going to have seizures, whatever these different illnesses, ailments, or categories are, you're going to have more of those, because that's how, you know, breeding works. Your children have half of you, and they're no doubt going to get the bad half. So we're just going to sterilize you. And that was found to be okay in America in 1927, right about the time Hitler is just starting to take control of the Nazi Party and really kind of build it up and make this thing go. How convenient.